I've been chasing this guy ever since I joined the force. He has no conscience, and he shows no remorse. He's the mastermind behind numerous bombings and political assassinations. He's a felony list a mile long, murder, arson, kidnapping, terrorism, you name it. He's the most dangerous and brilliant criminal mind I've ever known. For years, I've been watching him, tracking him, studying his every move. I know his every mannerism, facial tic, gesture. I know him better than he knows himself. And now, after all this time, I finally figured out a way to trap him. I will become him. I live.
You're not having any fun, are you, Sean? Try terrorism for hire. We'll blow some stuff up. It's more fun.
Plan B. Let's just kill each other.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith. Or am I Mike DiCrescio?
Whoa.
And joining me on this journey in the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike Smith DiCrescio.
Whoa! So, guys, today we are indeed discussing the final film in what we've decided to call the We Made It Ma trilogy. Right, Mike?
Yep. It took us the third episode to come up with that idea.
Yeah. We've been quoting We Made It Ma over and over again. For weeks now, and now that we finally reached the end of it, we finally have a name for the three movies. So, of course, this is the three films that cemented Nicolas Cage as an action star, all released within a year and a half of each other. First, there was Michael Bay's magnum opus, The Rock, and then there was the gleefully insane Simon West joint, Con Air. And now, finally, we have reached the film with arguably one of the most insane premises in film history. John Woo's Face Off. Are you excited to talk about Face Off, Mike?
Oh my god, how could I not be?
Yeah, this is going to be a fun discussion, I think. Now, guys, Face Off started out as a spec script as early as 1990 with screenwriters Mike Werb and Michael Collery bringing it to a bunch of different studios and producers before it landed in the lap of Michael Douglas, who they had hoped would star in the movie alongside Harrison Ford. Now, if you notice, Mike...
What? Yeah.
Give you a second to collect yourself.
God.
Now, if you notice, Mike, I don't know if you noticed the opening credits, Michael Douglas is actually credited as a producer on the final movie.
I don't think I noticed that. How about that?
Well, there is that. So Michael Douglas and Harrison Ford were a pair that were looked at for this movie. Other pairs that were looked at for this movie, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone, they were considered. Bruce Willis and Alec Baldwin were thought of for this movie. Al Pacino and Robert De Niro, which would have been insane.
Yeah.
And Jean-Claude Van Damme and Steven Seagal.
Okay, this is already... The cast, like, John Travolta and Nicolas Cage is already the most 90s thing of all time. Yet, somehow, all of those other options are more 90s.
I want to go to all the alternate universes where this movie was made with the different actors.
Yeah,
just
absolutely.
To see what it's like. Because, yeah, and eventually... Acclaimed action filmmaker John Woo got attached to the project. If you're not familiar with John Woo, he's known for a ton of Hong Kong action movies like Bullet in the Head and Hard Boiled. And at this point in his career, he had moved on to Hollywood, directing films like Hard Target and Broken Arrow. Face Off was the first Hollywood film in which Woo got pretty much total creative control without a ton of studio interference. And you texted me after watching it that it is basically the most John Woo film ever made.
Yeah, knowing that fact now, it makes a lot of sense.
A few years ago, Wu actually left Hollywood, and he's gone back to Hong Kong, where he is most recently directing a two-part film entitled The Crossing. I think both parts of that are out now. I don't know if they're available in the U.S., but that was released. Now, being a John Woo film, Face Off made heavy use of over-the-top, grand, operatic action set pieces. This film's budget was $80 million, and you can see them blowing that budget up on screen.
Yep. And it's actually pretty fun to watch.
Oh, yeah, that too. Absolutely. it's easy to just look at this movie as a great action movie. But give credit to the film's screenplay as well, because it has a lot of subtle nuances that... I feel like you think I'm joking, but I'm not.
No. It's just very lots of subtle nuances mixed in with car chases that are actually helicopters and jet planes.
Right. Boats flying through other boats.
Yeah.
But for example, the names Castor and Pollux are the names of the Troy brothers. Castor and Pollux are the names of the two major stars that make up the constellation Gemini. And Sean Archer is named after Sagittarius the Archer, which is the constellation that is diametrically opposite from Gemini. There's
that's way too deep for what this movie is.
There are so many intellectual underpinnings in Face Off, man. Also, on that subject, they make a point to note the blood type of both Nicolas Cage and John Travolta in the movie, Castor Troy and Sean Archer.
I did notice that one.
Yeah, and... Sean Archer's blood type is O positive. Nicolas Cage's is AB, I think. And O positive is the universal donor. Anybody could have O positive blood, which is like enforcing the fact that Sean Archer is the good guy. Whereas AB blood can just take a lot of things, but can't go anywhere. And so Castor Troy is always the bad guy. So many intellectual nuances underpinning Face Off, man. I'm telling you. And this film was actually originally set in the future.
Really?
Yes, which might have made the face-off technology seem plausible.
I really like the idea of this just like secret black ops military technology in like 1997 or whatever this movie came out.
Yeah, John...
that allows us to replace faces.
Yes, and John Woo actually ended up deciding against the future thing because that's exactly his reasoning, I believe. Now, originally, Nicolas Cage turned down the role of Castor Troy. Because he was not interested in playing the villain. But then he found out he'd actually be playing the hero for most of the movie.
Right.
And he quickly signed on. Nicolas Cage and John Travolta actually spent 2 weeks together before the movie preparing for their roles, learning each other's gestures and vocal cadences. So when you watch the movie, they are doing like pitch-perfect imitations of each other.
It's so bizarre.
It's insane. It's insane to watch. And just a quick side note, there is a recurring element that appears in all three films of the We Made It Ma trilogy. And I just found out about this a few minutes ago. In The Rock, Cage's character Stanley Goodspeed mentions that he drives a beige Volvo. And in Con Air, Cage's character Cameron Poe drops Pinball's body from the sky and it lands on a beige Volvo.
I did, yeah.
And now... And now in Face Off, what car does Cage steal after escaping prison?
A beige Volvo.
A beige Volvo. So
that's amazing.
There's more connecting these movies than just us saying that they're connected.
We have to rename it the Volvo Trilogy.
The Volvo Trilogy. Yeah, it's like the Cornetto Trilogy, but it's the Volvo. And like the other films in the Volvo Trilogy... Face Off is filled with recognizable faces filling out a ton of supporting roles, many of whom wouldn't be well known until much later on. The film, of course, stars Nicolas Cage as Castor Troy and Sean Archer, and it stars John Travolta as Sean Archer and Castor Troy. But Joan Allen plays Eve Archer, and she was also one of Peggy's friends in Peggy Sue Got Married, so there's a Cage reunion there. Alessandro Nivola, who was later seen in movies like American Hustle and Jurassic Park 3, plays Castor's brother Pollux, who incidentally sounds like Garth from Wayne's World throughout this movie.
Oh my god, he does.
Gina Gershon plays Sasha Hassler, and film director Nick Cassavetes plays her brother Dietrich. He was the director of The Notebook. So there is that as well. Dominique Swain plays Archer's daughter Jamie, while Harv Presnell plays Archer's boss Victor Lazaro. And then you've got Comb Fieri as Dr. Malcolm Walsh, CCH Pounder from The Shield as Dr. Miller, Robert Wisdom from The Wire as Tito, freaking Margaret Cho. as Wanda, James Denton from Desperate Housewives as Buzz, Tommy Flanagan from Sons of Anarchy as Leo, Danny Masterson from That 70s Show as Carl, Matt Ross, who's Gavin Belson on Silicon Valley as Loomis, John Carroll Lynch as Walton the Prison Guard, Norm from Fargo, and the Zodiac Killer from Zodiac. The probable Zodiac Killer from Zodiac.
Likely Zodiac.
And finally, Thomas Jane appears in this movie as Burke Hicks, the curly-haired prisoner with glasses.
Yep.
So it's just like a huge list of people who would go on to be very successful in TV after this movie came out. So that's pretty cool. And again, Face Off is directed by John Woo 1 year after Broken Arrow and 3 years before his next film, Mission Impossible 2. And the film was written by Mike Werb and Michael Colleri. Mike Werb also ended up writing another film dealing with the distortion and misuse of people's faces, 1994's The Mask, starring Jim Carrey.
God damn it.
So there's that. And on a budget of $80 million, Face Off made around $245 million, and it was nominated for one Academy Award, Best Sound Effects Editing, which it lost to Titanic.
Because wasn't one of the other ones also nominated in that?
I believe Con Air was also nominated in a similar category, also losing to Titanic.
Yeah, I think it might have been sound mixing.
Might have been sound mixing there, yeah. So Cage was all over the Sound Effects Awards in 1997. He did not win either of those awards, but they were nominated, both losing to Titanic. Face Off did, however, win Saturn Awards for writing and directing, and it won the MTV Movie Award for Best Action Scene, which was the speedboat chase, and Best Duo for Travolta and Cage.
There you go.
So there's that. And then the IMDb plot synopsis for Face Off reads, in order to foil an extortion plot, an FBI agent undergoes a face transplant surgery and assumes the identity and physical appearance of a ruthless terrorist. But the plan turns from bad to worse when the same criminal impersonates the cop.
Whoa.
So, Mike, what are your overall thoughts on Face Off? What did you expect going into this? Had you seen Face Off before?
I had not actually seen Face Off, no. Okay. So I went in knowing it's crazy, it's going to be silly and weird, but I was pumped for it, as we've talked about with the other two, with The Rock and Con Air. Those are the things we enjoy.
Right.
We like those a lot. And so I went in, you know, with the excitement and just straight away. So we have this whole weird montage of Cage planting a bomb, which is crazy. but even it's after that where I was like, oh, this is going to be it, where we have Cage arriving at an airport and it's during the opening credits the whole time. And he exits the car in slow motion. His jacket is windswept and billowing.
The giant trench coat, like billowing in the wind.
With the credit directed by John Woo.
Yep.
In case you didn't know already.
In case you were looking at that image and couldn't tell.
Yeah, exactly. So from then on, like from that moment, I was like, this is it. This is going to be the one.
Yep.
And it's just balls to the wall insanity. Like literally we have a car or a chase scene between a helicopter and a private jet on a runway. And it's like complete with like, you know, bumping into the rear of the car to get it to spin out. Like it's crazy.
Yeah.
And it's just fun throughout. It drags a little bit for me, I think. It gets kind of slow, and it's 2 hours and 20 minutes or so.
Right.
This could have been a really tight, like, 90-minute insane action movie, but it's still fun all the way through.
Absolutely.
For me.
Yeah, I would say, Face Off is, like, the perfect distillation of everything John Woo. It takes its insane premise and just runs with it. The action is incredible. Cage and Travolta are having a blast.
Yeah.
In this movie. And the world and supporting cast that it builds, especially Caster's allies, I think are just a lot of fun to watch. Like, they're just enjoyable characters to be around. And I agree with you, at 2 hours and 20 minutes, this feels a little long. but it's worth it, because every action scene's goal seems to be to try and top the previous action scene.
Yeah.
And it succeeds. And
it's definitely one of those things where you could tell that they're just the actors, everyone involved knows what they're doing, or knows what they're making, and it's just like silliness all the way through.
Yes, absolutely.
and watching Travolta do Cage being Travolta and watching Cage be Travolta doing Cage is like the funniest thing of all time.
Yeah, I feel like we've seen Cage go unhinged a few times at this point, and I feel like this is like one of the most unhinged Cage performances, at least especially in the first like 20 minutes or so when he's just Cage.
Yeah.
I feel like Cage amps up his insanity so that Travolta has an opportunity to amp up his insanity later on in the movie, which I appreciate very much, because I think particularly like Cage is great doing Travolta, but I think Travolta doing Cage is like next level. Like it's pretty insane. But we'll talk about Travolta. What did you think of Cage in this movie, Mike? How did you feel like Cage came off in this movie doing as Castor, as Archer? Which did you like watching more?
I think I liked Cage as Castor more.
I would agree with that.
Because it's just like it's like Quintus. Every Cage meme is from this movie.
From the first 20 minutes of this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like unhinged Cage, you know, him dressed up as a priest, to like headbanging to Alleluia. Like, yes. Like what?
Yes.
It's insane.
Oh my God. He may not have had much interest in playing the villain, but he goes all in to make Troy the sleaziest, most evil guy around. Yeah. Cause yeah, that's that opening scene where he's, like at the church, he's like headbanging to Hallelujah. He goes up and like feels up some teenage girl and it's creepy and like weird. And then there's the entire sequence on the runway with the FBI chasing after Cage's plane, which is just incredible. And, that crash had to be done in one take, since they were actually crashing a plane. that was a real plane that they were destroying for our entertainment. But yeah,
part of the $80 million we watched blow up.
Yeah. That was definitely a significant chunk of it, I think. Yeah, Cage makes you believe that this is a guy who would have golden pistols with dragons on them. You know? Yeah. Like, just seeing that was ridiculous. Like, just dual-wielding golden pistols with dragons on them and his trench coat and his sunglasses. Like,
yeah, directed by John Woo.
It was incredible. incredible. But then when the script is flipped and Cage is now Sean Archer, the good guy, I think he does a great job of selling Archer's, like, torment and pain. And, you know, to Cage's credit, I was thinking about this, all three of Cage's heroes in the Volvo trilogy, or the We Made It Ma trilogy, they all come off as very different characters, even though the films are pretty similar. Like, they're all pretty, like, giant, overblown action movies. But you get a sense of who these characters are. Like, Stanley Goodspeed is the scientist character. He's a little, like, eccentric and weird. But, you know, he's the scientist character who's, like, kind of in over his head. You get Cameron Poe, who's, like, this hyper-competent guy in Con Air. And then you get this Sean Archer slash Caster Troy in Face Off. And he's a total psychopath as Caster Troy. But as Sean Archer, he's, you know, this kind of tormented like guy who's like life is stolen from him, and like he's doing a lot of interesting work in all three of these movies, I think, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Like you said, despite the fact that they're three fairly similar movies, we do definitely have three distinct characters, which is a credit to Cage.
Yes,
I think
I would agree. And then we gotta talk about Travolta in this movie, who is just going nuts. Like, I think you know, he really is. Like, Cage sets it up for him like in those first 20 minutes. Like, Cage, it seems like Cage is going out of his way to be the most insane version of Cage he can possibly be. And then when their face comes off, when the switch happens, and John Travolta is playing Caster Troy now, he's doing his Cage impression, and it's incredible. It's, you know, he's just doing insane stuff throughout the movie. He's doing, like, the Cage, like, random shouts, and he's,
right.
And, you know, he's, like, getting people's faces, and it's just a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I think my favorite shot, I know this isn't what we're talking about, but it involves Cage, which is why, is after he wakes up in the hospital or in the room as Caster Troy.
Right.
And they bring the doctor in the room and he's like, what do you want? And we zoom in on the doctor's glasses and we see the reflection of a faceless Nicolas Cage smoking a cigarette. It's just the most ridiculous thing in a movie full of very ridiculous things.
Absolutely.
that shot stuck with me a lot.
It's gonna haunt my nightmares forever. How do you think this role fits into the roles that we've seen Cage play so far, Mike?
It's kind of, I'm gonna say it again, it's the culmination of all of the Nicolas Cage thing.
Right. Every time there's a new Nick Cage movie, we're like, this is the culmination of everything. And it's like, well, it is technically, because...
it's the latest thing. Yeah. But it, as we've said, it's Nicolas Cage at 11. it's him going. I think what you said too, the he goes over the top crazy to allow John Travolta to also go over the top crazy.
Right.
Which is fun to think about the two of them, like you said, 2 weeks together, learning each other's mannerisms and everything.
Right.
Just imagine the weird, crazy shit they did together.
Like, I assume they were like locked together in a cabin or something, and like
you're not locked. Yeah, I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me.
Yes.
but it's just a lot of fun to watch him just be bonkers, and he's just ready to take the big ride or whatever the hell he yells.
Right.
He gets blown away by a jet engine. Like,
yes. Yeah. And so we've seen, I mean, we've seen Cage play the villain before a couple times. We saw it in Deadfall, right? We saw it in Kiss of Death, a Vampire's Kiss, I suppose would count. But it seems at this point in his career, he much prefers playing the hero, right? Like that's, he almost turned down this movie until he found out he could be the hero for most of the time, for most of it. Right. You know, he did The Rock and Con Air where he was the hero. This is also around the time that Superman Lives was trying to get off the ground, where Cage was going to star as Superman in the Superman movie that never happened.
Right.
And that's actually a movie we should probably end up talking about at some point. There was a documentary which was released like last year or 2 years ago called called The Death of Superman Lives, What Happened. And I don't think Cage is in it, but it's probably...
No, I think I've seen it, right? It was like a Kevin Smith thing, I think?
I think Kevin Smith is interviewed because Kevin Smith wrote Superman Lives.
That's what it was, yeah.
It was going to be written by Kevin Smith, directed by Tim Burton, and starring Nicolas Cage, which, like, where is the alternate universe... where I can watch that.
Yeah, I want the Michael Douglas, Harrison Ford face-off and the Nicolas Cage Superman Lives. I want that universe.
But so I think we'll probably talk about the documentary at some point. Yeah, I don't think Cage appears in it. But,
no, I've seen it before, or I've seen most of it. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. There was some crazy shit that they wanted to do, which is awesome.
I'm sure there was. Yeah, but I think it's probably worth talking about for this podcast because it was it's about a movie that Cage was supposed to star in.
Sure.
But so, yeah, around this time, that movie was trying to get off the ground. So it seems like he's really into hero mode now, like action blockbuster hero mode now. That's what he wants to do. That's what he wants to be. And we are in full-on action blockbuster movie star box office draw Cage. Like, this is...
Oh, yeah.
This is like... This is part three of the We Made It Bot trilogy, the Volvo trilogy. So
yeah, this is, as we've been saying, he doesn't go back to this, or he doesn't. There's a pre and post this moment. Right. Nicolas Cage.
This is peak blockbuster draw Nicolas Cage, which is pretty big. And there will be blockbusters in the future. He's still a box office draw for a long time. But I think these three movies are like the pinnacle of like 90s action excess to the extreme. We'll talk about some scenes that stood out to you, Mike. Like, give me what do you think stood out to you in this movie?
Well, I think the whole climax, starting with in the church.
Yes.
And then the next 25 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
You know shit's going down when we start seeing doves walking in slow motion. Real.
As soon as I saw those doves, I was like, here we fucking go.
Yeah, it's hilarious. It's John Travolta yelling as Nicolas Cage in Latin, and starting a shootout in a church with doves everywhere. It's just a sight to behold.
It is. Yeah, it's a totally insane climax that only John Woo could do. You know, Woo could possibly do better.
Perfect.
You know, it takes place in a church. It's scored by a choir. There are doves everywhere. Travolta does a Christ pose at one point, and then it cuts.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to Jesus, and it made me laugh so hard.
Well, my favorite part about that was that we see the crucifix first.
Yes.
And then and then we cut to Travolta, and he does the pose, and then we cut back to the crucifix
as if we forgot it was there. And it has like a cool sound effect going along with the cut too. It goes like whoosh. And then there's something like a 10-way Mexican standoff between like Cage, Travolta, Eve, Sasha, the FBI, and a bunch more.
Everyone has two guns.
Everyone has a bunch of guns, and they're all pointing at different people. I feel like I was waiting for somebody to get mixed up and not know whose side they were on. And then the shootout starts, and everything's going insane. Eve like hits somebody with a chair, and it's crazy. Gets out of the church, and it's like there's still fighting going on and stuff. And then Jamie shows up out of nowhere, Travolta's daughter, Archer's daughter, Travolta as Archer's daughter.
Right.
She shows up out of nowhere, and then she shoots her dad. She shoots her dad. She doesn't believe him. That his face is off. And then, but then Castle Troy gets her. But then she uses Castle Troy's own knife that he gave her earlier in the movie to defend herself, and like stabs him in the leg. And he's like, ah, which is great. I thought that was a great payoff for that. I wasn't actually expecting that to be paid off.
Yeah, that was the that scene earlier when John Travolta beats up the boyfriend and gives her the knife. That was the moment when I texted you, why is this movie so long? Like, literally during that scene.
I was, that's funny, because I had a different reaction to that scene. I was like, how can I watch this like 10 more times? Because the sight of John Travolta just beating the shit out of her boyfriend was amazing. Like, he punches through the window of his car and then, like, pulls him out and, like, throws him across the driveway.
Yeah.
It was crazy. But then, you know, so back to that climax scene. She like, stabs Castor in the leg and she has, like, that breakdown. It was like, will someone please tell me what planet I'm on?
Yeah, this is the most 90s movie of all time.
Yeah.
So much, so many...
And then that all leads into that fucking epic boat chase where, you know, it's just Travolta and Cage in the boats, like, speedy boating past each other. And then there's one point where a boat flies through another boat as it's exploding.
Yeah.
And it was then that I understood the power of cinema.
You saw the face of God and it was John Woo.
I was blown away. I was mesmerized by what was happening. You know, the boat's flipping around in the air. Cage and Travolta both fall out as it explodes. It's one of the coolest things I've ever seen. And then Sean Archer kills Troy Volta with he kills him with a harpoon.
Yeah, that's the most. That was so insane.
It was nuts. And then the Archer family adopts Sasha and Troy, Sasha and Troy's kid, Arnold. And they take it very well for something that just got sprung on them.
Yeah.
Sean Archer just comes back with Arnold, like, oh, bye. We're going to take, by the way, we're taking care of this kid now. And the family's like, oh, all right. Like, sure.
Yeah. And I wish they had, I mean, I know we see it in the very beginning, the opening scene with Sean Archer and his son with the, like, hand on the face thing. But, like, yes. What is that?
I guess it was, like, an Archer family thing, because Travolta does it to everyone in the movie.
Yeah, and then the daughter does it to the new kid at the end.
Yes, yeah.
Like, I get that it's a family thing, but it's so weird. I don't know.
Yeah, but I do want to talk about the opening scene, which is, I think, very interesting. And it's, I think, different from a lot of the rest of the movie, because it's very quiet. It's the opening scene. It's a mostly silent scene showing Cage shooting Archer's son. Like a flashback to 6 years ago. I think it's a silent scene. It's just, you have the music going. It's like Travolta and the merry-go-round. Cage is like in the back with a sniper and he has a weird mustache for some reason.
to show that time has passed.
Yeah, exactly. Although the mustache makes him look older.
I know.
But whatever. And then he shoots Travolta and the bullet goes through him and it hits his son and his son dies. And it's this very like dramatic, like, a very like operatic scene, like it's like this kind of like, silent movie acting almost of like,
yeah,
this kind of grandiose thing that's happening, and I thought that was very effective.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting too. It deals with that, you know, what we, like the intellectual underpinnings of this movie, where it seems like it's on purpose, and a lot of John Travolta's whole life becomes about that moment, and he even says an inch to the right and it kills me instead,
right?
And all this stuff, and then at the very end, Nicolas Cage reveals, or Castor Troy reveals, that he was trying to kill Travolta. The kid was an accident,
right?
Or at least he claims it was. And it's one of those like, you know, the spiral of grief and what it could do to people, and all this really interesting things mixed in with this crazy movie,
crazy insane movie where people's faces come off and go on other people's faces.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it transitions right from that scene into the scene where Cage is dressed as a preacher with the church chorus,
right?
Which is a total insanity from minute one, and that goes into the airport runway scene with Cage with the golden guns and trench coat blowing in the wind,
doing the shrug guy thing.
It's that was amazing. So yeah, the scene starts off with the, you know, Cage gets on the plane. There's this woman on the plane, and he starts like hitting on her, and she says something like, "If I let you suck my tongue." Would you be grateful? And she starts making out with him, and I was like, oh, that's weird. Then it turns out she's an undercover FBI agent. And I was like, okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
But then he kills her, and Travolta sees him do it, and then Cage like looks back at Travolta as the plane is like, you know, rolling down the runway, and Cage just has a little shruggy guy thing, like, yeah, what are you gonna do?
It's great.
It's fantastic. And then, you know, Travolta, like, eventually Travolta gets Cage at gunpoint, and Cage has like a mini breakdown freakout thing.
Yeah.
And he's like talking to Travolta, and he's shouting things like, I don't give a fuck!
Or, right.
And stuff like, yep, that. It's just, it's...
I that scene also made me wonder, is Archer the cartoon partly based on this character? I mean, I know Archer the cartoon is based on all action heroes in general, but they make a point about how he can count bullets.
I thought about that too.
Yes. And that's a huge running joke through the Archer show.
Yes, that was my first thought, actually, when I heard, because Cage says it first, and then Archer says it again right after that. And it's like, that was my first thought, was that like it was an Archer joke.
Yeah, and to be fair, Archer gets it right, and Cage gets it wrong, or Troy gets it wrong in the
street.
So that man was like, that's got to be where they got that from.
I would not be surprised. Not be surprised. And yeah, other scenes. Yeah, Cage waking up without his face was awesome. It's like a weird like body horror moment in the middle of this like insane action movie.
Yeah,
we only see glimpses of Cage without his face. Like, it's mostly shot from behind, so you only see the back of his head a lot of the time, or like,
right,
the side. There's one bit where like the camera very quickly goes like pans over like Cage's face from the side, and you see like a glimpse of his face, and then it cuts away very quick.
Yeah,
and then again, you see like the reflection in that guy's sunglasses, Cage like smoking a cigarette with no face. It's just blood vessels and
yeah,
like, just, or it's weird. It's, you know, it's funny. It's like super. It's such a goofy sight, but it's like also kind of creepy and like menacing.
Yeah,
you know, and his like what do you want me to do? It's like, take one goddamn guess.
Yeah, and then my other favorite, my Nicolas Cage moment, I think, that stuck out to me, just because we're a big fan of his weird line readings.
Sure.
And it's interesting to have it be Archer as Troy, like Travolta as Cage.
Okay.
Or all the way around, excuse me.
So Cage is Archer.
Right. Yeah, Cage is Archer, there we go.
Okay.
When he's talking to his brother in the prison, and he's like, oh yeah, that bomb you built, it's a work of art, it belongs in the Louvre. And he stretches out the word Louvre for so long.
Yep.
It's just one of those things. I was like, nailed it.
Yes. That was great. Also, that prison was insane, right? Like,
that's like, that's future prison. The way you, now that you tell me that it was supposed to be set in the future,
that makes a lot more sense now.
Makes actually, a lot more sense.
But it's like a magnetic prison where all the prisoners are forced to wear these gigantic magnetic boots.
Yeah, they're forced to wear the boots from Zelda. So.
They're actually literally the boots from the movie Super Mario Brothers that the Goombas wear.
They were. You're right. Oh my god.
Like, that's not. I'm not making that up. That's a trivia fact.
That's amazing.
The same boots. So there's that. So these magnetic boots that keep them like magnified to the ground, I guess. Like they keep the prisoners in line or whatever. But I think everything in the prison was hilarious. Like it was just nutty from the get go. There was, you know, the scene where Cage like gets into a fight with Thomas Jane. Nuts, and like Bollocks' lines like, oh well, after he went into prison, you had a three way with his wife and sister. Cage is like, oh well, I can see why he'd be upset.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's definitely one of those like comic book moments where, like, you know, Cage breaks out finally, and then it turns out he's just on like an oil rigging platform in the middle of the ocean. Like, that screams like superhero prison to me.
Yes, and that whole prison break sequence was fantastic. Because you get Cage in like sort of the electric chair, like they were gonna mess with him, and then he gets out. The prisoner helps him escape, and then he like blows up a giant thing of sulfuric acid and.
Yeah,
and like, and it gets on some of the guards, and one of the guards is Norm from Fargo, which is cool. And and then he finally gets up to the top, and there's like this giant like 1984 style TV in the prison.
That's exactly what it is.
It reminded me of the Apple ad that were, you know, the classic Apple ad where they break the screen, and it was just super weird. And you get to see like Cage is able to watch Travolta as Castor Troy diffusing the bomb and being like a local hero.
Right.
And he has like a line. What did he say? He was like, oh yeah, interception. Now our side's got the ball. Sorry. And yeah, he gets out and he gets on top of the oil rig, and it's just like he's just on the helicopter, he's in the middle of the ocean, and then suddenly a giant helicopter shows up and it's Cage versus a helicopter.
Oh my god.
Which was pretty awesome as well. And he eventually dives into the ocean. I don't think it shows how he gets back from the ocean, no. Right?
We just know that he jumps off the platform.
We just assume he swims back to, to,
yeah, I think,
wherever they are.
Right, I think after that scene, it's around there, I think, maybe, we get the greatest, Margaret Cho gets the best zinger in the whole movie, when she asks, sir, did you just have surgery? He's like, what do you mean? He's like, did someone take the stick out of your ass? And it's the most ridiculous.
Yeah, and the rest of the FBI team just goes into, like, uproarious laughter.
Yeah. It's amazing.
That was pretty great. And yeah, I also loved, In the prison, Archer Cage, like when he first gets there, he's beating the shit out of Thomas Jane, and Archer Cage like sort of gets into being Caster in the prison, and like Thomas Jane says something to him, and it's like the prisoners around them are like sitcom audience,
yeah.
where he says like, hey, what, like, oh, I guess you're stuck in prison, and the prisoners are like, ooh,
oh my god,
so I do want to mention that, 'cause that made me laugh.
The prison's very weird. Everything about it.
It's just a weird, weird thing. There's the scene where Cage as Archer shows up at Caster's old, like, hideout, like his buddies, the Hassler's house. And there's, like, they have a whole scene where they just keep saying the words face off over and over again.
I'd like to take his face off. If you excuse me, I have to use the little boy's wee-wee room.
Cat.
You want to take his face?
Yes.
His face? Oh. The eyes, nose, skin.
It's coming off.
Face.
Yeah.
And I mentioned in our last review, there was a scene in The Rock where they say welcome to The Rock, and there's a scene in Con Air where they say welcome to Con Air. And I was hoping for something in this movie where they say welcome to Face Off. And I think this is as close
as we're gonna get, yeah.
So when he says I'd like to take his face off, I was like, count it.
Yet another similarity between the trilogy.
Yes. but yeah, just that whole, it's like a full minute where it's just like, I'd like to take his face off. And every other character is like, you want to take his face off.
Bizarre. Absolutely bizarre.
Yeah. What did you think of Gina Gershon's character in this movie, Sasha? I liked her a lot.
It's cool. I think she's just doing Gina Gershon.
Yeah. I mean, she was a year before this, she was in the movie Bound, which is incredible. I don't know if you've ever seen Bound.
I'm not sure.
That's the Wachowskis' first movie, actually, and she plays like it's like an erotic lesbian thriller.
Is that with Jennifer Tilly, I think?
Yes, with Jennifer Tilly.
Okay, yeah, I have seen that. Yeah,
yeah, it's good, right?
It's crazy.
It's insane. This kind of felt like a continuation of her character from Bound, just kind of like the tough as nails, like takes no shit kind of thing. Although in this version, I think she has like a weirdly incestuous relationship with her brother, which
Maybe.
Was well, her brother was. Dietrich, the bald guy, played by Nick Cassavetes.
Oh, and yeah, yeah,
at
yeah.
Like, she kisses him, like, on the mouth at one, at one point. And it was weird, right?
Yeah, they act like the child is theirs. It's weird.
Yeah, that was very odd. Because I assumed that, like, I didn't know he was a brother until, like, later on in the movie after he died, when she said, like, you killed my brother. And I was like, what? let me go back here.
But I think she does a pretty awesome job for what her small role that she's in. She's pretty badass.
Yeah.
She's grabbing machine guns and lighting up the cops and doing all this crazy shit, just like everyone else.
Yes, and there's that whole shootout sequence in their house, which I also love. That was amazing. And there's just so much insane stuff going on. There's the Somewhere Over the Rainbow sequence, which is crazy. Like, there's a part where it's just, they put the headphones on a little kid and they're like, okay, just leave. Like, go away. And so he puts the headphones on, and you just hear Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and it ends up scoring the whole sequence for a few minutes. And it's beautiful. It's
Yeah.
It's the kind of John Woo, like, kind of finding the beauty in all the violence sort of thing. Also, Dietrich's death was hilarious because there is a comical amount of blood that's spilling out of his neck while while he's talking.
Yeah.
Like, it looked like a Monty Python thing where it was just, like, the blood was, like spilling out in, like, this little hole. Like,
and he's just having a normal conversation.
Yep. So that was pretty great. And then there's the, you know, Travolta shows up as Caster Troy, Cage is there as Sean Archer, and they have that moment where they're both on, like, two opposite sides of a pillar, and that pillar has two mirrors on them. Yep. And so Travolta has this whole line, and it's like, okay, I guess let's go to plan B. Let's just kill each other. And they both, like, spin around, and they have the guns shooting at the mirrors, and it's a beautiful reflection of the fact that they're seeing each other for the first time. I don't know.
Whoa.
Because Cage is
seeing hashtag deep.
Yeah. Because Caster is seeing himself as Archer, and Archer is seeing himself as Caster, and a lot of stuff going on, man. a lot of depth in Face Off is what I'm saying.
Intellectual underpinnings.
Yeah, and so other stuff. Is there any other stuff you wanted to talk about, Mike? Anything that stood out to you? Stuff that you wanted to mention in Face Off?
No, I think we've covered most of it. I think we should get into. I want to hear what other people had to say.
We should get into some Netflix reviews. Let's do that. So, but before we do that, let's just say, like, we're both big fans of Face Off, right? Like, I think.
I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, it's a little long, but it's worth it. I think it's so much fun to watch. Like it's just
I think this would be fun to watch with a bunch of people.
Absolutely. All right, so let's move on to some Netflix reviews for Face Off, Mike. Here's a 1-star review of Face Off. I hated every minute of this movie. I am so very thankful I stopped before it ended. It was torture to watch. The plot was stupid, gratuitous violence, nowhere to go but down as the movie progressed. What kind of perverts enjoy things like this?
Wow.
I actually like most of John Travolta's acting and some of Nicolas Cage's, but this was inexcusable. Why do I not research more when this movie service begins with an N and ends with an X? Recommend something to me. One day I'll learn. Don't waste your time with this one. Yuck.
Wow. So judgmental.
I know, right? He also won't say Netflix by name, which is weird. Maybe because he's writing this on Netflix, he felt like they would, like, find him? I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. Interesting.
But here's a 5-star review of Face Off, and this is about my feelings on the movie right here. It's about two guys who swap faces. Enough said. Watch it. Do it. It is so good it might melt your face off.
Wow. Yeah, like, that seems appropriate.
I like that. It's about two guys who swap faces. What more do you want?
Yeah.
Here's a 1-star review, though, of Face Off. This is one of the dumbest films of all time. I am now dumber for watching it, and clearly so are all the people praising it. I only watch Nick Cage movies to get a kick out of his bad acting, and this movie is pretty classic one to laugh at. I only wrote this in disbelief of how many people seriously think this is a good film. How is that even possible? The acting is so horrible, all caps, I would love to assume it was meant to be a satire, but apparently not. No wonder this world is so fucked. However, I do praise Travolta and Cage for successfully being the two worst actors of all time. They should make babies together and see what happens. Actually, I would like to see that movie.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we can blame Face Off for why the world is so fucked, Mike.
Yes, it all started with Face Off.
It all started with John Woo. Here's a 5-star review of Face Off. Firstly, I have to say, this movie really blew my face off. It is like Nicolas Cage had two faces. That's something I really like to see in a movie. 10 out of 10, would bang my arch nemesis's wife again. Yeah, so there's that. And then finally, here's a 1-star review of Face Off. This is the last one. Face Off, this movie is better titled Fuck Off. When a movie lacks a good story and good actors, a Hollywood movie usually throws in some guns and high-speed chase scenes. This movie is for those testosterone hounds who need a gun to compensate for their manhood. Face Off has so many boring chase scenes and guns, it just screams of, how do I fill in 1 hour and 40 minutes of screen time to get those dudes to spend their money and get them to the theater? Totally unrealistic and unbelievable script. This movie has so much gratuitous violence, it just screams of incompetence on so many levels. I don't know what was worse, the plot, the acting, or the fact that I wasted my time watching this movie. If I had to choose, I would say Nicolas Cage did a better acting job, but John Travolta, with that joker of a mouth playing a heterosexual, well, that's a stretch on every level.
Wow.
Harsh
with
words.
With the hot take.
With the hot take. So I think we're more in line with the 5-star reviews of Face Off.
Was it only 5 stars and 1 star? Is that all you did?
That's all we had for this. There were a couple of in-betweeners, but they weren't as funny. but yeah, and I will say the last 5-star review, I didn't do it justice because I said this movie really blew my face off, but he actually puts in the pause where it says, this movie really blew my face off. There's a dot, dot, dot there. So
that's amazing.
Good for you, man. But yeah, so we're big fans of Face Off. That concludes the We Made It My Beige Volvo trilogy. Sad to see it go.
I'm interested to see what the future holds for us, Mike. Yes,
onward and upward. We'll let you know that in just a minute. Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all of our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Thank you for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That is Mike DiCriscio. Or I'm Mike DiCriscio, and that's Mike Smith. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and take a moment to give us a review. Help support this podcast and Filmbook by taking part in our Patreon campaign. You can find our Patreon campaign page at patreon.com/filmbook. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you are emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now join us in 2 weeks, where we will be taking a break from action to talk Nicolas Cage's role in the 1998 romantic fantasy drama, City of Angels.
What a change.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. It doesn't really seem like my thing, but I'm open to it.
We'll find out. We did like Moonstruck, I think.
We did. We did. This is a little different. So we'll look into that when we come to it. And then you can join us for next week's film bookcast, where instead of a film review, there's not really anything big opening up in wide release on this weekend. So I think what we're going to do instead, the Westworld season finale airs on Sunday, so we might as well just talk about that, right, Mike?
Yeah, that's our tried and true. We don't know what to talk about, so we'll talk about the HBO show.
That's very true, but we're going to dedicate the episode to it. We'll have that as our featured review. Just talk about all of season one of Westworld. We'll go into all the plot details and the spoilers and all that kind of good stuff. So that's pretty exciting. Westworld has been pretty insane. It's been an insane ride, Mike. And it's been massively popular. It's been a hugely popular show, so I imagine our numbers will go sky high.
That's right. We're going to ride those coattails.
We're going to break 100.
Hopefully. That'd be cool.
We usually break 100. Don't worry, guys. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage.
There's a